is an insulin resistant factor there. And I think in those scenarios, it's much more of a potential problem where you've got a sustained elevated level for prolonged periods of time.
Yeah.
But I think when you're in the 2IU sort of range, I mean, I've known people that have run 2IU either daily or every other day or those sort of combinations for years.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and if you're tuning into us for the first time, Dave is an educator for PEDs and steroids to the police and the military in the UK. Plus, he's the owner of Eval Blood Analysis. You can get your lab work done by Dave in the UK. You're also an expert witness. I want to let everybody know this stuff every time now, in case they're just tuning in for the first time and they're like, who are these people that are talking about gear? All of our programming is... All of our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Use our code THINK for additional savings. We are brought to you by Strom Sports Nutrition, for those of you in the UK. Lots of great health and performance stacks over there. And we're brought to you by SupplementSource.ca for our Canadians. Dave? Guys, Dave is in a different location today. I'll give you a minute to guess. I'll give you a minute to guess where Dave is. You what?
Secret location.
Dave's in a new secret location. If you're watching live, feel free to comment. We've got a couple topics. Number one is what's the minimum effective dose of growth hormone? We also got a bunch of actually questions about back training. So we're going to go in depth about that. But before we do, let's lead with, like, you know, everybody wants to hear about the gear stuff. So minimum effective dose of growth. This was a question that was over at our Facebook group for Think Big Bodybuilding Media. What says you, David Crossland?
Two.
What is one expecting to get out of 2 units?
So this is the big debate, isn't it? GH, muscular growth, GH well-being, GH fat loss. I personally think that as 2IU is going to result. In fact, I've even seen people get something out of one, but 2IU is going to result in improved sleep, slightly improved recovery, and a mild composition change if everything else is on point. It's not going to work against shit diet and stuff like that, but if you are pretty much on point and consistent with everything, you will see a composition change with as low as 2IU. You're not going to see dramatic. You'll get a little bit of better fullness, but you're going to be pretty much fuller. Like, basically, you want a good day for fullness rather than, you know, an exaggerated fullness. You shouldn't see any real water retention. Sleep should be slightly improved. There should be a slightly better recovery, and it's just a general sort of in a better place.
Yeah.
I think if you go higher, then you're going to start potentially. And the thing is, with females, even two can start to develop things like carpal tunnel and joint pains and stuff. So with females, I would be definitely pushing even lower and down as low as one. If you're looking at something in the way of rehab, injury recovery, then I'd probably go 2 and 2, so 2 a.m., 2 p.m. I wouldn't really cap out much above 4, 5 as a single dose p.m. I know there's some people that feel that higher doses are going to result in some muscular growth. I know some of Broderick believes in as well, that if you combine a higher growth of GH with high volume style training, so very volumizing training, high rep count, high set count, that you will see some muscular growth. I've not seen anything to convince me of that. I've done very high doses. I didn't feel I got anything particularly out of them. But, I'm open to someone proving me wrong. The problem is you don't see growth as a standalone. It's always used with anabolic, so you can never decide what's down to what.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of one of the things I was going to try to get at, too, is, you know, you may have somebody tuning in who says, hey, you know, would this be a good option for a first cycle to use, you know, this 2 units of growth? That's, you know, that's what I can financially afford right now. Would this make sense? My answer to that personally would be your cost of benefit. You're not going to, like you said, Dave, it's more of an icing on the cake thing. The effects you get are going to be super subtle. I would say it is kind of like, as far as things to add, supplements to bring into your plan, I would have it way down the list. You know what I mean?
I mean, my personal experience with GH is the sweet spot I found was 6 IU every other day, but it was generic. It wasn't pharma.
Yeah.
And I found that was a very sweet spot that showed some good composition changes. But the main thing I got off it was a sense of well-being. Was a much better sense of just wellness. Better sleep, improved sex drive, and just a general, I feel good. I feel healthy, I feel good.
Yeah.
Wasn't running big cycles. You know, cycles were 1.2, 1.5 gram max. Was sitting around 280 pounds. So I wasn't a small guy. And that was very much a very sweet spot for me at that time. But I think I would have got equal out of 3 or 4 every day as doing the higher dose every other day. And like I say, it wasn't generic, so you can factor in that it probably wasn't as effectively dosed as pharma would be.
Yeah.
But yeah, I when I pushed high with the pharma, I didn't see anything stand out from it. But I mean, there was a bucket load of other things in there as
you had
well.
A lot, so, you had a lot going on at that time.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was a shopping cart approach to drug use, definitely at that point. So it would be hard to say, but if growth was this amazing compound at 27 IU of pharma growth a day, pulsing it day and night, I would have expected to see something that I could attribute directly to that.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anything.
Chase Irons has been up there. He's been up in the higher double digits. And, you know, he's enjoyed being on it. When I saw him back in October, he was big. He was much bigger than the previous time I had seen him, like a year or so before that.
There's a definite fullness. There's a definite visual size increase that comes with it, without doubt. I think that's undeniable. What of that is actual established tissue is where I start to get a bit of an argument with it, because it's like, I don't really think there is that much. And like you say, when you compare it to something like Gear, I mean, your cost to reward ratio is basically reversed. You know, if you were saying that for every $10 I spent on Gear, I got, if you wanted to put points on it, I got a 30 point advantage. It'd be the opposite way around. It'd be for every $30 you spent on growth, you'd get a 10 point advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, one of the side effects that we talk about is issues with insulin sensitivity. So some people start seeing their blood sugar increase. And of course, we can correct that with insulin. But I feel like in the last few years, maybe the last 5 years, I have seen people, they seem to think that, like, you're instantly going to have blood sugar issues, you know, and let's go back to that 2 units. I personally, I don't know about you, I haven't personally seen issues with low dose growth hormone 2 units. I haven't seen blood sugar issues in myself or in people that I've worked with. In fact, I would go out as far as to say that, you know, in that dosing range, that's very common to what you would get prescribed through a rejuvenation clinic. And and if it was that big of an issue, I would think that these clinics would automatically put you on insulin as well. You know what I mean?
I've seen some mild changes in HbA1c So some mild insulin resistance build, but we are talking nothing that's real world impacting or nothing that's going to have any dramatic impact. Insulin resistance and diabetes or type 2 diabetes is part of the watch concern for people that use growth hormone because they don't have any natural production. So it is something that's mentioned in the literature around treatments for dwarfism and stuff like that, that it's something that they need to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
So, and it's something that's been highlighted with the new super long-acting growth hormone stuff that's coming out. Is an insulin-resistant factor there. And I think in those scenarios, it's much more of a potential problem where you've got a sustained elevated level for prolonged periods of time.
Yeah.
But I think when you're in the 2IU sort of range, I mean, I've known people that have run 2IU either daily or every other day or those sort of combinations for years.
You're a fan. You're a fan of that every other day, aren't you? Or an infrequent? And is it because of the blood sugar effects that you're less likely to have problems?
Yeah, it mitigates that a little bit better if you're into a long. If you're committing to GH for like 24 months, 36 months, or even longer, which the life extension people are really into long term GH use, then I find that EOD protocol works so much better long term. And it just allows for some natural bridging in between. What was popular for a while, and I don't see any reason for not to do it, was GH day one, sucker 2 J2, GH J3, sucker 2 J4.
Oh, you're saying like a secretagogue like GHRP6, CJC, yeah, that
so
stuff?
You would pulse, my pronunciation shit. So you would pulse your natural in between the artificial. And that seems to have a very good effect as well.
Okay. So, I mean, the con of it is, let's say you're doing a 20-week prep and growth hormone is part of that protocol and it's at 2 units. We'll say you have either enough to do 2 units every day or 4 units every other day. Okay. Mm-hmm. The benefit is, if you're each time you take it, that growth hormone is only in there for a period, what is it, 12 hours, something like that, the active life of the actual growth hormone itself, you're getting that additional fat loss benefit from it. So I know a lot of guys who may use it first thing in the morning and do their fasted cardio, get on with their day, and they just kind of start their day off that way. If you're using it every other day, you've cut that window in half. After 20 weeks, it's only really been 8 weeks that you had, you know, the growth in there, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm looking at every other day as a long-term sustained protocol rather than, if you're using GH for a cut, I would definitely be looking at E-day.
Okay.
But if I was putting it in as a background support long-term, then I would look at every other day.
Okay, and the thing being, too, like, that's not going to have any negative effect on your IGF levels, right? So we have kind of a couple things going on here. We have the direct effect of the growth itself, and then from there, the cascade of hormones that ends up, you know, creating IGF. Your IGF is higher, and that supposedly would be where any type of, like, growth, additional growth you get from GH would happen, right?
Yeah, my argument is that when you look at IGF-1 supplementation, so you look at Increlex and the use of Increlex, the dosing and the duration of dosing and the frequency of dosing is so high that I just do not feel that can be replicated with GH use. I mean, Increlex is ridiculous dosing. It goes up to 1.2 milligram per kilo twice a day.
Okay.
Which is huge in comparison to what you'd create as a cascade from GH. So I just don't see the carry-off there. I mean, I've seen lots of people in the past talk about running Increlex and, oh, yeah, I just run 50 micrograms a day or whatever. And it's like, apart from potentially a little bit of fullness, you're not going to trigger any actual real-world growth from that dosing. You know, it has to be so high, and it's painful to run. The side effects create a lot of joint pain and a lot of muscular pain when you're running it at the doses required to stimulate direct muscular growth from IGF-1. So I've, in my opinion, and there are plenty out there that disagree with me, but in my opinion, the direct muscular benefits from GHR overplayed, but very useful fat loss tool, very useful well-being tool. If you've got the budget long-term, a couple of IU, ED or every other day, will improve the quality of your well-being without doubt.
Yeah. Okay, one last question on this topic, and we'll move on, because like I said, we had some training stuff too and some other listener questions. And hey, if you guys want to take part in the next show, then definitely comment below. We got some stuff off Rumble. I've got some stuff off Patreon. Thank you guys, everybody from Patreon, for supporting our programming. But the last question I had is, so where are we going to be if 2 units is going to be kind of like a pseudo replacement dose? It's going to be like kind of like high end, quote-unquote optimizing, you know, put my hand up in air quotes there. We're optimizing at that level probably. What age group is going to benefit from that? Like, it, you know, because if you're, say, 23, you know, you're still going to get a great benefit from taking a low dose like that? Or is it going to be more suited for, like, a guy that's in his 40s like us, you know, or myself?
Well, definitely you're going to see more benefit from an older age because, obviously, you'll have much, much lower natural levels of GH production. One of the things with taking GH is you create the timing of when you want it in your system, which is not naturally going to be in line with what would happen naturally.
True.
So, you know, you can put it where you want it, when you want it. I would say 2 is probably going to push most people above what they're naturally producing. I think 1 for a male would be probably natural. I think as soon as you go into 2, you're going to be a little bit above and beyond what would be. Not hugely. For argument's sake, let's look at testosterone as an example to try and make a comparison here. Let's, you know, upper end of test in NMOL, and I'm going to speak in English, so you yanks can just toss off, I don't care. 29 NMOL, upper range. It would be the equivalent of running test at, say, 35.
Okay.
So you're not hugely elevated, but you're topping it. At 2, that would be where I would be within how it would reflect to natural ranges.
All right. Well, listen, I think we covered enough of that. We had a topic here, and this is from Patreon, from Kyle. And he says, I'd love to hear about how Dave structured his back training. What types of movements would he use in a session, and why? And he also added, too, Dave always has good nuggets on training when training comes up. Does he have any favorite bits of advice for back?
I would say back is probably one of the hardest body parts to train. There's old sayings like you always know someone who trains hard because they have big legs and big back, because they are the most demanding muscle groups. They are huge proportions of our muscularity, and as a result, they require a huge amount of effort to train effectively. One of the issues I find with back is you can't see it when you're training, so it's very much a feel movement.
Yeah.
And it is, because it's actually quite a complex group of muscles, there's a lot going on in there. You know, it's not just lats. You've got upper traps, mid traps, lower traps. You've got teres minor, major, rhomboids, all the rest of it. And even rear delts kicking in there. Spinal erectors as well. So it's not so much a singular muscle. There is sometimes problems with you stressing the wrong parts. Now, naturally, most of us are going to have strength in our upper backs, and we're actually going to lack strength in our lats, because generally we don't engage the lats in modern-day life. So it becomes a very dormant muscle.
It really does. It is
the biggest, and it has the most potential for growth and size, But it's not what we default to in a back movement. We will default to upper traps and shoulders. So you'll see a lot of people row high.
Yep.
Here. And when they pull down, they'll tend to lean back, and it almost becomes a row to the chest when you physically look at the load in relationship to the torso. Now, that's where a lot of people go wrong with back. They end up getting very strong across the upper back, and they don't actually kick the lats to kick in or engage. I think for a lot of people, they actually need to pull their weight back and go very form focused to start with until they're starting to feel the lats and the back engage properly. And then the back is one of the muscle groups that I feel benefits from overloading. But it has to be backed up with complete form. So, example, I've never been a deadlifter. I've never been one for deadlifts. I don't like deadlifts. I will use partial deads where you really just work the area of the range of motion that's more back dominant. But I find deadlifts cross over so many body parts. It's not really a back exercise. There's a lot of posterior chain. There's a lot of core.
Yeah.
So I like pull downs. I like rows. I find dumbbell rows okay as a movement, but most people tend to do far too much torso twisting.
They do. You get a lot of hip in it.
Yeah, and you're working your back, so your torso shouldn't be fucking moving at all. It should just be your arm. And when you look at the muscularity and the development of the back, basically what the back does is move a lever through a hinge. The hinge is the shoulder, the lever is the upper arm, and that should be all that's moving. Nothing else needs to move unless you're working spinal erectors or traps where you'll have a double shoulder lift. So a lot, I think, is first ground that technique, and then do not be scared of going heavy. So, typical back workout for me, back in the day, I'd start with bent over rows. Now, when I do bent over rows, and anyone that's watched me show them how to do a bent over, the first thing you'll notice is I'm very bent over.
Okay.
I don't do the Yates's row, and most people do the Yates's row wrong anyway, because they tend to end up being an upper back shrug movement rather than a row driving the elbows low and down.
The what row?
So I am quite bent over. So my lower back is almost parallel to the floor, but then I have an arch in my back which lifts my chest. Yes, Scott at the back.
What you said you don't do what row?
Yates row.
Oh, okay, okay. So what did Yates do? He was kind of a little bit more upright.
He was very high, but what a lot of people get wrong with Yates row is where with the Yates, you know, you're much more upright, so you can handle more load because you're right. Not putting so much load on your lower back. What you've got to do when you do the rows, you've got to drive your elbows back and down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what people do is drive their elbows back and up. And so it becomes almost this shrugging row.
Yep. Yep.
What it should be is back and down so you can gaze the lats, but you're in a more upright position so you can carry more load.
And when I start getting fatigued, I can't help it, you know, because the assisting, like you said, there's all sorts of parts of the back. So those other areas for me, they want to kick in, they want to assist. And
that's where this will go.
Yeah. But what I'm saying, though, is because I'm in that position more upright, then it's easier for those other muscles to start helping, you know.
So I'd be quite bent over, lower back almost parallel to the ground, but I do have a decent arch, so my chest is lifted high.
Yeah.
In all back movements, I personally feel that your chest needs to be high, the lower back needs to be arched. I'd start with just a bar, and I'd scrape those elbows past my sides and really engage and make sure my shoulders are dropped. I'm not hunching as I come up with the bar. I'm not doing this in the, you know, my shoulders are low, my elbows are scraping through. Plate, two plate, three plate, four plate, all in good form. No swing, no body movement, no upper back movement at all, rock solid. Five, start to see a little bit of a dip. So there's a little bit of a boom, power through. But again, when I'm bringing that bar into my low waist, my chest is driving through. So I'm always keeping my chest pushed through the movement.
Yeah.
Six plate side, this is a power lift. This is a but once I'm in that contracted position, I'm lowering under strict form and control, and then I'm driving again. this is an overload at this point. So at this point, I'm beyond the capability of what my lats can pull in form, but I'm making sure that the negative is loaded in really good form. And then I'd pull back to, say, 4 plates, 3.5 plates, and really tighten up and just bang out strict rep after strict rep after strict rep. And my whole focus is to generate as much discomfort in my back, particularly my lats, as I can.
Yeah.
I'd then go on to pull-down movement, and I do pull-downs a little bit different to a lot of people. I make sure that my elbow stays underneath my hand throughout the whole movement. Now, what most people do, if I move to the side and get in the mirror, is as they pull down, and then the elbow kicks back.
Yes, yeah. I have never heard it mentioned that way before, that your elbow stays under your hand. I do the same thing. I explain it differently, but that's a really good way of putting it.
So I'm aiming to put my elbow into my side. That keeps the lat engaged. I also make sure that a lot of people get too close to the machine and then lean back. I pull my arse back and almost lean into the machine. So when the bar comes down, it's literally taking the skin off my nose and my chin.
Okay, yeah.
What I find is too many people focus on trying to do what they think the movement is instead of focusing on trying to work the muscle. So people think on a pull down, the bar needs to touch your chest. Doesn't matter where the fucking bar goes. The bar's got nothing to do with your back. It's where your elbow goes.
Yeah.
And what you're trying to do is get your elbow as deep as you can, because that's what's actually contracting your back. Now, if your bottom hole and your back, I mean, I can feel in this position now, my lats are fully contracted. My hands are nowhere near my chest height.
Huh.
You know, I've got another 3-4 inch to go before that bar hits my chest. And I just physically can't do that and keep that contraction on my lat, because my lat doesn't go any further down. So that would be the pull downs. Again, I would get to the point where they would be heavy. So in my case, it would be 500 pounds.
Where do you find a 500 pound pull down, Dave?
It's a 300 pound stack with loads of 20s put on it.
Oh, God. I feel sorry for whatever gyms you trained at then.
So, in fact, I think it was more than 300 pounds. What I used to have to do, I would strap up, and then I'd have to get two people, one on each end of the bar, to pull it down so I could get under the pass, because otherwise I'm just going to get under the pass. Don't get me wrong, that's on my super heavy workout, but that's where I'd get up to. Otherwise, it'd be around the 400 mark, maybe 420. And then I'd finish with a low row. And with the low row, I'd make sure, again, I keep my chest up. So as I move forward, I'm actually lifting my chest as high as I can. That will really stretch the lat. And then as I pull back, I don't let my back go past 90 degrees. So as I come back up from that stretch, I go to 90 degrees with my back. And what I usually do is get someone to stand behind me with their shin against my back. So I've got my limit point, and then I've just got to pull an in. And as I pull in, I lift the chest and push it through.
So I didn't hear you mention really any of
the keys. The key.
Oh, go ahead.
That's for me, the keys to back training are, in a row movement, the elbows must be tight into the side.
Yeah.
And in every movement, the chest must remain lifted, and particularly at the bottom of the movement. So as you're hitting the weights with a bar, or as you're pulling the lat pull down bar down, you don't allow your chest to drop. You actually raise up to meet it.
Yeah, you said you. So it sounds like you're not relying on a lot of machines for your back training. There's a lot of free weights. What is your mindset behind that? Because I'm with you. If you want to grow the most amount of muscle you can, I think that mastering machines is beneficial. Mastering free weights is beneficial.
I have nothing against machines. The problem I find with a lot of machines is you're trying to get something that has a hinge and a lever point suit a wide range of different size bodies.
Okay.
And it's very rarely optimal. Some machines you'll fit in sweet as a nut and you'll really feel them. And if you want to make hay with them, crack on. But a barbell allows me to put the bar in the optimum position for my lever length and my body length. I don't always have that with a machine. So sometimes there's a compromise. And I know when I've used chest machines, I'm not even holding the handles, I'm holding the frame, because that's the push point that's best for my levers.
Yeah.
So and that's it. It's not, machines are great, particularly if you're feeling tired or you're a bit fucked off or you just haven't quite got the energy to be doing bent over rows. Bent over rows are demanding. I mean, it's like doing a set of squats, doing bent over rows. So I do use machines. The other thing I found with machines is the plate loaders limit the weight, because quite often I'd be stacked on the plate loaders and still not have enough.
Okay.
So I tend to go free weight because it allowed me to move. Well, it was a more difficult movement, which limited the weight I could move.
Yeah.
Machines allowed me to move more weight, which became counterproductive in a lot of cases.
I'll throw in, though, I do think there is benefit to mastering free weights. Mindset that I have been taught is that when you're using a free weight, you not only have to, in this case, pull, but you're also having to stabilize the movement too. You have to stabilize the weight. It's going to take a lot more effort to get that figured out, you know, and to be able to control the movement. I'll tell you what, though, I had a lot of issues with the barbell row, my limiting factor being my lower back. And I just, for me, a lot of bent over movements had been difficult. I found the dumbbell row to work really good for me. Limiting factor with dumbbell row is going to be how strong you get. You know, I mean, it gets harder and harder to find heavy enough dumbbells. Now, I've had 150-pound dumbbells here at my home gym, and I was able to work up to that. So I could only imagine for a guy that had gotten even bigger than me and stronger than me. That said, though, dumbbell row, it was my go-to, because being able to stabilize my low back allowed me to get a lot more out of it.
I mean, the thing is, I think you've got to give everything. A lot of people give up on exercises, not because they can't do them, but because they're hard to do.
Yeah.
And my mental approach with training was I was always looking for things to make it harder.
Yeah.
I was never looking for ways to make it easier. That's not to say there isn't a time when I've done the ego workout just because I could.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been in gyms when I've been on holiday and stuff and deliberately gone to a machine because I know I'm going to stack the thing beyond belief.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to show off. And so it's happened, it's been there. But for the vast majority of my training, I always look for how do I make this harder? How do I make this more difficult for myself? And how do I make it more difficult for the muscle? And that ultimately rewarded me with the best growth.
Yeah.
Because that usually meant I was working in a way that was at a biomechanical disadvantage to me, which meant my muscles had to work harder and therefore I got stronger.
Yeah.
And when you focus on just moving load you will get so far, and I've seen people develop quite very reasonable physiques with just focusing on load, but it gets to a point where there's no more load because the machine is stacked.
Yeah.
Or you can't get any on the bar, or you get to a point where the loads are just plain dangerous.
Kuba and I talked about that. He said he was like a super strong barbell rower, and barbell row was like his jam. That was his move. But he never developed a back. You know, he was like, I got super strong. I was incredibly strong. He was probably stronger than most people on that movement. But then, you know, he competed and he realized like, hey, my back development doesn't match the strength that he had. And so then he went back to do what you're talking about, you know, is actually trying to figure out how to make an exercise harder. I'm with that 100%. I had to retool my back training. In fact, I pulled this up recently. Let me see if I can grab it really quick. This was my six months of progress here. To the right was 6 months of time. This was a couple years ago now. Gear wasn't significant. You know, I'd used way, way more at different points. Nothing was really serious about diet at the time. I made sure I got enough protein in. I got a carb with every meal, but I wasn't like forcing food. The only big difference is I retooled my technique because my big mistake, Dave, with that pull down, I was doing that exact same thing. I was getting my elbows were going out as I pulled down. Instead of, I love the way you said that, keeping your elbow under your hand. For me, I thought about the pull over. I thought about the way a pullover moves, and if I'm doing a dumbbell pullover, my hands overhead, the elbows are tracking in front of me, and that was the cue that worked for me. Elbows are tracking in front of me versus tracking out, and I was able to move that load down into the lat, and I'll even call it, man, the lower lat. You know, a lot of people today, I think, are like, no, you can't hit the lower lat, but I feel like I kind of demonstrated that my lower lat's got a lot thicker by doing just that.
I haven't trained weights in quite a long time now, and I can still sit here now and flex my entire lat top to bottom and feel every inch of it.
Yeah.
Because I've spent so long teaching my brain to control my muscles in the correct way. The mag bars are really, really useful if you're struggling to learn how to do a wide grip pull down, because the way the mag bar works, it actually puts your elbow under your hand.
Oh,
and if
okay.
you watch, that's why they're so effective in back training, because they actually put you in the right position to engage your lats. You've just got to, again, people get so focused on the movement they're doing rather than what the muscle's doing in that movement. And you really need to start to pay attention to, where's the muscle attached? What hinge and lever am I using? And then can I put the load at the end of that lever to maximize the stress on the muscle at the lever, at the hinge?
Yeah.
Because if you have a stick, if the weight's right at the end, it puts much, much more stress on the part that's trying to move the stick. And that's effectively what you're doing with your muscles. So like in a lat pull-down situation, if you have your hands directly above your elbows, the end of your lever is your elbow. That's what the back's moving. If your hand's directly above that elbow, the load's on the end of the lever, and that will maximize the stress into the back. And so it's silly little things like that that you just need to be more aware of what the muscle does in the movement rather than what the movement does.
Yeah, I wish I learned that sooner. I really do. All right, listen, we got some other stuff here. We had one from the live stream from Jennifer, and she says she is planning to compete. What is it? Let me actually grab this question here. I can throw it up. Boom. She says she's 10 weeks out from her first figure show. Training on my period absolutely sucks. Any advice to help through my workouts?
I don't really know. It's obviously something I have no experience with. I know I'm a big fanny, but I don't.
You don't get a period.
I can share with
her what Victoria would say.
It depends on the severity of the period pain and everything else that's going with it, doesn't it? I mean, I can imagine for some women it's brutal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she did say that training absolutely sucks on her period. Victoria's thought is usually that, you know, because there's this whole movement now of, and she says she feels run down. There's this whole movement now of like trying to train to your cycle, meaning your female cycle, not your anabolic cycle. And she said, like, just trying to, I don't think that Victoria is personally a fan of that, but if you use some common sense and you say, like, Dave, if you had a really long day at work and you were a little bit dehydrated and you still needed to go to the gym, common sense would tell you that it's probably not the best day for you to set a PR, right? You know, you need to kind of respect where your body's at. So keep in mind, too, that during your period, you may be experiencing some hydration changes. If you're getting bloating, there's a good chance that bloating is because you're not getting enough water in. We always, you know, we always think to ourselves like, well, I get a gallon a day, so, you know, I'm good. But understand that depending on stress levels, depending on hormonal situation, depending on weather, depending on a lot of factors, your hydration can change day to day. So getting more fluid in, in a phase like that is probably going to be to your benefit. But then also, you know, it just might not be the day to absolutely push to be that, to do the absolute hardest thing you ever have, especially if you're already in a calorie deficit, you know, possibly taking an extra day off of training, or maybe working in a workout that isn't as taxing. Let's say she's doing something where she has a shoulder day. Well, what if today is a really bad day? Can you hit shoulders today instead and then work back in a little bit later? You know, those would be my thoughts and kind of the stuff I've picked up from Victoria along the way.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it would have the logic of what I used to do would apply in the sense that I knew within the first four or five sets if that was going to be a bad session.
Yeah.
You know, luckily they weren't that common, but yeah, I usually knew like, no, this is going to be shit. I just don't have. So I would just switch it up and I might do more volume, superset sort of bass stuff where it's a much more pump and squeeze. I might knock, you know, the top 30% off my weight, but push the reps up higher. So it was still taxing, but taxing in a different way. So I wasn't trying to move massively heavy load, but I was trying to move load for a higher volume of reps, and I might have even thrown some TUT work in there and stuff like that to just swap it up more in line with what I was capable of, either physically or mentally, depending on what was going on.
All right, let's see what else we have here. And by the way, I didn't tell you guys, so Dave's crappy connection is because he's on a boat right now. Dave is coming. I don't know if this might be the first podcast ever that has been done from a boat. Oh yeah.
Well,
your audio completely unsynced from your video now. I don't know what happened there.
Well, what I was going to say was tomorrow I'm fitting satellite internet, so I should have a good signal from there moving forward.
Are you just going to live on a boat now? Is that what's happening?
No, not yet. Eventually, yes.
Eventually you are?
We're back. We got some clarity.
All right. Let's see what else we have here. Oh, we did have there was a follow-up question about back training. I'll see if I can find that. Oh, and we had a request for Uncle Dave's advice. What about this one? So I'm not seeing a lot of times we get gear questions. I'm not seeing as many gear questions, which I guess works for us this week. Although we did a whole launch with that whole GH thing, so I don't know how that's going to play out. But what's a good way to curb your appetite and avoid the munchies while cutting weight? And Casey at Patreon, thank you.
I'll pass this to you, Scott. This should never be my strong point.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think the number one thing is to recognize your situation. The number one thing is acceptance. The number one thing is to recognize what you're trying to do and recognize that this is what your goal is and play the tape through. You know, play the tape through means think about what the outcome of that is going to be. I absolutely guarantee you that if you eat junk food like 1 hour later, you're going to be just as hungry as you were before. But guess what? You're going to have gone off diet and you're going to have negatively impacted your goals. Junk food is always going to be around. And down the road, there will be opportunities for you to eat it again. This is just your brain trying to play a trick on you. And I totally get it. I think anybody who's tried to diet hard, we've all been there. Things that you can do to work around it. I say all that first because trying to like eat something to fill that void, because it is a void. We are literally creating a void when we go on a diet, you know, in our stomachs, there is a physical void there. And then it's kind of an emotional void too, because we have a lot of emotional ties to food. If you try to fill that void, there will be no filling it. And it can become a really negative thing where now you're eating like a jar of fat-free peanut butter every day and all these other sugar-free sweets and stuff. So my thought would be this. First, find that acceptance. And then second, you know, what are the low calorie things that you have available? Something like more green veggies in your meals. It's going to help to keep your stomach fuller. A trick that I liked to use, and it was green tea. I would use a cup of hot green tea mid-afternoon. It was something that, you know, obviously it's not going to be super filling to drink green tea, but it does have flavor. It does give you a sense of satisfaction, and I would mix L-tyrosine with it as well. L-tyrosine is really beneficial while we're dieting. It can support thyroid function. It increases alertness. A lot of people use it as a nootropic. Dave?
Is 20 chicken McNuggets the same as green tea?
It's close. It's close. No, but
okay. I'll have you close. Don't do me.
But yeah, and I just looked at that as being like this ritual that I had. So I'd have the green tea, I'd take the L-tyrosine, I'd get that mental boost, and it would help me to stay on track better overall. I mean, if you really needed to, there's like sugar-free Jell-O is going to be, I believe, four carbs per cup. So, you know, that's not going to take you that far off. And if you limit it to one cup a day, that's not going to be a bad thing. Take a spoon and just take little tiny bites at a time, and it's going to be a lot more satisfying than if you just like power through and demolish the whole thing. That sugar-free Jell-O, by the way, not sugar-free pudding. Those two things are very different in my book. So just a few thoughts there. But that's the advice I usually share with my clients.
I found pickled vegetable.
Vegetables?
Pickled vegetables.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you could eat like that's a great one. I've used like a pickle. I've told
pickled
people
onion, pickled gherkin, yeah, pickled cabbages and stuff like that. I find that quite useful.
Yeah, I think that sodium helps to fill your stomach up too, you know. But watch out for like the bread and butter pickles, things that have added sugar, because that's going to be no bueno. All right. Oh, here's one for you, Dave. Back to the gear talk. He says, I recall Dave mentioning using Novadex while on Nandrolone. Can Dave please reiterate the details and reasoning behind that? How often do you take it? Dosing? Would it be on the same day as your shots or opposite days, etc.? Should Aromacin be incorporated as well? He's planning on 150 test every week, NPP and DECA ramping from 300 to 1,000 from the start to the end. And he's also going to be using 50D ball during the final 6 weeks. He says, and then he said, should I include Aromacin as well? He's 6 foot two, wow. 200 pounds, 13%. Loves the show. And F YouTube, he said.
I think things have got maybe slightly screwed here. So I like to put Novadex in as a start of a cycle as a preventive measure just to safeguard against gyno. However, Novadex does actually have an action against the progesterone receptor as well. It's a little bit, it's not a primary, but it will actually work slightly as blocking the PR as well. But yeah, so I use Novadex as sort of a safeguard. At the end of the day, estrogen issues, water retention, things like that are easily fixed. But the development of physical tissue in the breast is not so easily fixed. So I just like to throw Nova in. 5 or 6 weeks into a cycle, I would test the estrogen. That's a low test dosing, but obviously the DECA is going to go very high. So you're still going to get some estrogen there. So I suspect you are going to need some form of estrogen management at some point. Whether you need it from the get-go would very much depend on you as an individual and what your previous experiences are. But I would always throw Novadex in to start. Then at about week 5, I would test and see where estrogen is. And from there, I would formulate an estrogen management plan depending on what I'm doing with my dosing. And how I'm feeling or how the individual's feeling when it comes these days, because obviously I'm not using myself anymore about TRT. So it would be right. We get to week 5. Where's your estrogen? How do you feel? And then I'd set some form of management moving forward from there. But at least I know we've got some protection against gyno to start with.
Okay.
That's my sort of thought process around Novadex, more than it has any particular benefit to being used with DECA or anything of that nature.
Yeah. So, man, I'd be curious to hear how this guy does. I don't know personally, man. I haven't seen anybody I've ever worked with who has had a successful run with a high Nandrolone cycle using test. I've heard of people doing it. I haven't personally seen it.
I've had success with sort of 300 and 900. So 300 tests, 900 DECA with clients. But I've never had anyone run that low. And not okay. 150.
Yeah.
And there has also been people that obviously haven't coped with it and need to change things for one reason or another. But yeah, I've had people tolerate it very well, but not everybody. Definitely, it's not something that everybody's going to cope with. It's not just the lower end of DHT against the DHN. It's also just the fact that Deca can really screw certain people's happiness.
Yeah. I've seen that with a lot of people. Nandrolones in general seem to be kind of questionable for people, I think.
It seems to be something that was never really thought about or even considered in previous years, and has only sort of come to light in the last five. It's only in the last sort of 4 or 5 years I've heard people have issue with depression when on Deca.
Yeah.
Maybe it's to do with overall dosings, or maybe it's something else that's going on. I'm not sure. 10, 15 years ago, people would run tests and Deca all day long. We'd never hear anyone, people having a complaint about it. But then also 15 years ago, people ran cycles and just got on with it. They didn't discuss how they felt, because it wasn't a dumb thing. You just did it and got on with it, you know? So maybe it's always been there. It's just been a lack of feedback that's not existed in the past.
That's possible. We did hear people talk about some compounds like Trenbolone. You know, the Trenbolone's always kind of had that, you know, divorce in a bottle reputation. Mm. So there is
It does. But, I mean, you go back to when I was cutting my teeth, which, well, to be honest, I forget. That's 30 years ago now, not 50. You know, so you go back 30 years and Deca was a staple and nobody ever had any issues with it. But like I said, you know, that was an age where you didn't talk about your issues as well.
You just buried them and lifted more weight.
You just got on with it, you know what I mean? Shit happened, fucking deal with it.
All right.
Nobody cared anyway.
Yeah. How about this one then? And we've kind of talked about this kind of stuff before. He said he did his first cycle, was a 250 test. And he said he responded really well. So for his next off-season bulk, he'd like to, he wants to focus on adding mass. He says he wants to add something to that, maybe D-ball. What dosage? Thanks, guys.
You first.
Well, you know.
My brain needs to engage.
All right. Let's look at it this way. If you did really well in 350 test, there's a real good chance that you do really well with 350 test again. So there is that. If you want to try to keep things as minimal as possible, Deanabol is a compound that'll put on a lot of water weight and give you a lot of strength. It's not something that I would run through the entire cycle. Do keep in mind, there's going to be Your estrogen levels are going to change. There's going to be higher potential for side effects. So if I were to use it, I would try to use the minimal amount possible to get the effect I want. Now, that said, there is going to be like a minimal effective dose too. You know, we've talked before about, hey, maybe taking 5 milligram would be enough to notice a difference in the gym and feel like a little bit better pumps. But realistically, I don't personally think that that's going to provide a lot of additional muscle growth. So we do need to take enough to kind of get that supra thing going on. You know what I mean? And I would put that at maybe 25-ish, somewhere in there. And I would only run it for a controlled period of time. Now, keep in mind, too, I don't know what he's doing. Is he coming off and going to PCT after? I'm going to assume he is. If he's doing this cycle at 350, my guess is that he's PCTing and going back to natural levels. You know, a lot of times we've talked about using D-ball toward the end of a cycle nowadays. But if you were to do that, you might end up with like higher estrogen and more complications at the tail end of your cycle as you come off. And it could become more of a mess getting into your PCT. So that would be something I'd look out for. But since he knows how test affects him, I think that's the first and foremost thing that we want to know. How does that first compound affect you? And then from there, you can, in future cycles, begin layering things onto that if you wanted to. I think D-ball would be a decent option. And I'd even say, for his purposes, maybe let the test get built up, and then maybe a 6-week period with the D-ball, something like that, at 25 per day, and then finish the cycle out. That would be my thought. But I think there's so many different ways you could do it. You could run it the last 6 weeks. You could run it the first 6 weeks. You could run it on training days only. You could run it on training days only for, you know, the last 4 weeks. There's really a lot of ways to do it. That's just one.
Yeah, first thought would be just do 500 mega test.
Yeah.
Why do we need to add anything else? You were on a low dose. There's still plenty of ceiling with the test on its own. You know how you operate with it. You're going to need some estrogen management at 500, I would suspect. Then the only thing D-Ball is definitely one of the compounds that's going to favor a bulk. My only concern would be the lack of experience in estrogen management, whether I'd want him, if he's flying solo, to start to have to try and cope with the estrogen with his lack of experience. So
yes.
I'd probably also possibly favor a second compound being a DHT.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea at all.
So you could do the test with some VAR, you could do the test with some MAST, you could switch it up. But I think from where he started, going up to 500 total injectable, either all test or 300 test, 200 MAST or whatever, would be a very easy way to move forward without actually needing very much in the way of management. Because as long as his MAST is genuine, it's sort of self-controlling is that 300, 200.
I like that, actually. And I would feel a lot more comfortable with that setup. Like you said, not knowing if he's doing this on his own. I assume he is if he's asking us. I think
you could sort of say that and just go and run. You wouldn't need to go, right, okay, well, you need to do this at this point.
Right.
This at this point. You could pretty much go, there's your shopping trolley.
I've seen gyno issues with D-Ball, I would say, on a much higher frequency than most other compounds, really.
Mm.
It comes on hard D-Ball, and fast, too.
D-Ball's a nice drug. I like D-Ball. I've got nothing against it, but it does require some intelligence with its management. And I think because it's such an old-school drug and it's been around for so long, a lot of people don't realize, actually, you know what, you sort of need to respect that stuff. It's not just a case of throw a tablet down your throat and leave it be. It converts to estrogen at a big rate, and it converts to a synthetic estrogen that's super strong. It's not like your natural estrogen generator of test. It's much more potent, it's much more impacting, and it needs respect, where you could go with a MAST or an Anavar and know that I don't really need any management with this. I can add it in with the comfort of it's going to be difficult to go wrong.
Yeah, I like that. Primo being another option. But if you can get real Primo, you know, I guess it's more available nowadays than ever.
I would say 30 milligram on an oral would be your cap point for your first time at dipping your toe. I agree. Your 25-30 would be super sweet.
Yeah. All right. So we did have a question for you, Dave, regarding what was it here? Dear Davey segment. He says, brilliant Uncle Davey segment. For the next one, what are some of Uncle Dave's best sleep tips?
I'm not a big using something to sleep fan. I think as a community, and I think as a general populace, human beings in general are getting more and more entrenched in the pill for every ill, a tablet solution to every problem.
Yeah.
And though I'm not saying that's wrong, for me personally, I prefer to work on the foundation of whatever it is that's stopping me sleeping. There's nothing to say that, having said all that, there's nothing wrong with using something like, you know, GABA or whatever it may be in order to help your sleep. But I do think it always needs to be a double-pronged attack. So if you're going to go for a supplementation or a chemical aid in order to help you sleep, I think you still need to work on the brain training side or the stress management side of also helping you sleep. And that does mean, you know, some form of relaxation, be it meditation, be it a reduction of oral stimulation or ocular stimulation, in that you go to bed and you you leave a phone alone for an hour before you go. My wife likes baths. She'll go and sit in the bath for 45 minutes before bed and use that as a way to release everything out of her head, so that when she goes to bed, she's not. I like using notebooks, so I will write everything down that I know I need to deal with, and then I basically what I do is that's almost like a programming that it's written down now. I don't need to think about it.
Okay.
Because I need to remember it. I can put it out of my head because I've written it down. It's recorded. I know what I need to do.
And then I can pick it up and
reload it into my brain for the next day.
Yeah.
So there's lots of different ways of how you can calm your brain. Listening to music works for some people. Reading works for some people. But I do think bedtime routines are useful. And I think working on whatever the problem actually is. Now, obviously, some of us just aren't wired right anymore because of what life's done to us or what we've done to ourselves through various things, including chemicals. But where I can, I'll always work on the training my mental state, even if I do add in a little. I mean, I don't sleep the greatest probably 40% of the time. I've always got shitloads going on in my head, but I just stubbornly point blank refuse to use anything to aid my sleep because I know if I do, that's what I'll do.
Yeah.
When I would rather work on, it's the same with work. When I'm tired and I'm struggling, I would rather work on strengthening my mental resolve to get that work done. And that can be various things, you know, visualizing the end goal, visualizing what the end dream is, visualizing just. But the other thing I find is I go back to what I've said a few times is just keep swimming. I just go back to just do the next step, just do the next step. So like when I'm working late and it's 8, 9 o'clock at night, I've been on the computer since 5 o'clock in the morning. I've still got 15 reports to get out that day. I just focus, do the next one, do the next. I don't look at what I've got in front of that because that's disheartening.
Yeah.
And then I'll look from that one step and like, fuck, I've only got 3 left to do now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's like, it's come from nowhere because I've just been focusing on the first step rather than the journey itself.
I kind of do that too.
Yeah, you can do that on that very low level of just a task you're dealing with, and you can do that on bigger projects that you're working towards. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's a Scott is probably actually better versed in the supplement side of. You've probably got more knowledge around what supplements will help with sleep. Where I tend to try and be analytical in my brain function and go, right, okay, so, you know, what are we worried about? Right, what can we do about this? I can do this, right, write that down, right, okay, can I do that? Right, okay, let's focus on what we can do.
And I think that's more what he was going to, because he was asking Uncle Dave's advice, not like, hey, what can I take, you know?
Yeah, so I would what I like to do is to try and focus on a positive action, even if it's a negative problem. So if I'm faced with something that's problematic, and particularly if it's out of my control, we never have one problem. We've always got multiple problems in life to deal with. So there's like we're having a VAT audit at the moment. It's completely nothing I can do with it. It's the accountant that needs to deal with it, so it's in the accountant's hands.
Oh, what?
It's obviously VAT, value-added tax. Taxman, basically.
Oh,
is
doing I gotcha.
All right, so it's one of those things, but you can't help but be concerned about it. It's just natural. You worry about it. It's like when the police follow you. You've done nothing wrong, but you still start worrying that they're behind you, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I've got multiple other things going on, so, like, instead of thinking about that, I've been putting some work into a pharmacy project, so it's like, I'll be like, right, okay, so I will start visualizing what I'm going to do with that project, which is positive. So that's a positive thing. I'm being proactive. I'm looking at something that's positive. I'm looking at something that's moving forward rather than focusing on something I have no control over.
Yeah.
And And generally, when we don't have control over things, we create negative scenarios attached to them because we don't understand them. We can't control them. So I'll just focus on something that is positive that I know I can actively work towards.
It's good advice.
I go to sleep with positive reaffirmations going on in my head about what I'm going to do being productive, rather than negative thoughts about something I can't control.
Well, you gave us two bits of advice, and I'm taking them personally. You gave us more than that, but the two I'm taking to heart is going to be to write stuff down, because I need to get better at doing that. Victoria and I actually just talked about that, and remembering the things that are in my control versus the things that aren't in my control. Because a lot of people who follow the channel know there's been a lot going on in my life lately, between losing the dog and the channel and a good friend, and it's been a really tough time, Dave. And it's remembering things like that that I think are going to be grounding. I'm on the upswing now, you know what I mean? And it's just a matter of putting all my pieces together. I agree with you wholeheartedly, though. Like the supplement stuff, there are a lot of supplements that are helpful, and I think the best thing I can always say is we did a podcast. I did one with Dr. Dean St. Mart. Called Hacking Sleep. So if you look up Hacking Sleep with Dr. Dean St. Mart, that's a good one. And he explains why we experience things like insomnia, and he explains like what the chemical cascades are in our brains and some supplements that you can use to counteract that, like B5P, you know, simple, healthy, over-the-counter supplements, not things that are going to Band-Aid it, you know, like fenibut.
Yeah, I mean, you know, B5P is going to increase dopamine. You feel good, your reward chemical. I mean, I think a lot of us can get to a point where we feel no reward in the positive things we do. And we need to sometimes just step back and go, you know, actually, that's a good thing I've done there. I actually do deserve a pat on the back. Well done me. I did that. I did that myself. That's good. And we're socially, we're sort of taught that's arrogance. That's, you're not allowed to self-congratulate. You are. You've got to be measured with it, but you still have every right to reward yourself, even if it's just in your own head, because you've done a damn good job. You know, I mean, I've got 12, 15 blood reports to write. I'm going to try and get them done tonight, and if I do, I'll go to bed with a good job, David. You've done well.
So you're sleeping on a boat tonight.
Yeah, sleeping on the boat till Friday.
Can you show me out the window again for our listeners at
home?
It's
dark. It's pitch black. You're not going to see
Okay. So you're on a river, though. You're on a river right now.
We're in a marina. We're next to the River Thames. We're in the Thames and Kennet marina.
Okay. You're obviously, you're like further north in the country. How far south could you? Oh, you're south now?
At the moment, we're south. The boat's down south.
Wait, hold on a minute. Where are you? Like, what area? I want to look this up. Like, what?
Just outside Oxford.
Oxford. Okay, hold on just a minute here. I'm going to pull this up. I'm going to get a map here. Let's see here. Hold on just a minute. Let me go to here, and I'm going to do this. All right, Dave. So here's Oxford.
Yeah, further. Go open up a bit further.
Wait, there's Oxford, and I see rivers here. There's the River Thames.
Yeah, follow that down.
Oh, down.
No, over where you were going.
This way.
Across. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, see that big collection of water there?
Right here.
Yeah.
You're in that.
I think so. Not sure.
So this connects to a little river that connects.
No, we're not in that. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
Go back out again. Go back out a bit more. Wait, stop. Right, let's go. It's getting all. Right, type in for search Henley.
Henley. How do you spell that?
H-E-N-L-E-Y. No, H-E-N-L-Y, I think. Henley on Thames, yeah, that's where you want. Go to there.
Okay.
Right, so go down on the map. Like that area to your left there.
Oh, okay.
Where are there?
So How far south could you go right now if you wanted to? Oh, now my map's not loading. Why is my map not loading, Dave?
London.
There we go. You could go all the way to London from here.
Yeah. And route out the other side.
There's Portsmouth. Where's London at from here? Oh, there's London. Okay.
I can go right across to the other side.
Can you go out into this?
Yeah. Right, so there are people that have crossed the channel in barges, but to do it you have to have a pilot's license and you have to have a pilot on board with a radio and various other safety equipment, because you are going to be traveling into shipping lanes. But yes, a barge has and can make that crossing.
Holy shit. So if Dave disappears, guys, you know that he found open waters and he's just gone. And that's all there. Well, you could still do the show, even if you went on the run and you left your life.
I can get to Bristol. I can get up to Birmingham. I can get to the other side of the coast. And get a fair way from here. I've probably got about 400 miles of navigation canal from there.
All right, guys. Well, if we don't see Dave again, it's been a pleasure. And I safe travels to you, my friend. For real, though, appreciate you taking the time. Our regular show got messed up. We weren't able to record, so Dave recorded from the boat today. We appreciate having you. Are you taking new clients right now, by the way?
Yes, yeah. I've always got a couple of spaces. I tend to always just leave a few hanging around because I do a lot of people come in and go, and then they'll come back, and then they'll go, and then they come back. So there's always a bit of fluidity with my coaching because I don't do a lot of comp prep, so there's not people tied in for fixed, you know, fixed events. So I do get a lot of fluctuation. So, yeah, I've always got spaces.
All right. You got anything else coming up?
I'm waiting for the I'm doing a seminar for the Granite City Classic in Aberdeen in, I think, about 8 weeks' time.
Nice.
And then I'm going to do another training seminar, but I'm waiting for the footage from the first one to come out before I start pushing that out.
Okay, right on, man. Well, keep us posted.
That went really well, but the numbers were a bit low, but it did go really well. But I'm actually thinking I might keep it low moving forward so I can get plenty of one-to-one time with people.
Yeah. All right, well, keep us posted on that. Let me know when the video is up too and stuff. Mm-hmm. And guys, check out our sponsors, TrueNutrition.com, and use our code THINK. They're high-quality, third-party tested supplements. Thank you to everybody from Patreon. A bunch of these questions were from Patreon today. You guys are helping to make this channel what it is, regardless of if YouTube wants us or doesn't want us or wants to monetize us or doesn't want to monetize us. Patreon, you guys are always there for us. And thank you to everybody, especially on the audio. I want to mention, too, I'm trying to get video going on Spotify. And there's a big lag. I put the audio up and then I put the video up, and it takes days, it seems, for Spotify to be ready to load the show. But we're going to continue to work on that. So check out that stuff. And of course, Strom Sports Nutrition, for those of you in the UK, great health supplements there, great health stacks and performance stuff too. And last but not least, supplementsource.ca for Canadians. Guys, they have great deals that change week to week. Hit them up if you want to save a lot of money, actually, and get great high-quality brand-name supplements. For another episode of the podcast with Dave Crossland, we'll see you soon. Thanks, Dave.
Bye.